Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the NFL Roadshow. Lindsay Rhodes here, coming off one of the laziest weekends of my entire life. Six NFL games, all back to back to back. I literally stepped outside like two times. And one of my children might become a degenerate gambler because of my efforts to rope him into the excitement with me, but that is something I can try and undo at a later date. My point for now, it was super fun, and I'm excited to discuss it further right now with my guest today, a veteran of the playoffs as a head coach and a player. Much more of an outdoorsy person than I am. I'm sure he wouldn't have sat on the couch for an entire 48 hours straight. But maybe he was better at pacing his time on the couch this weekend. Jeff Fisher, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, Lens. And maybe I was outside between games during commercial breaks, maybe even, you know, between Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Who knows? So I am an outdoors person.
Yes. I know. Not a great time for fishing, I guess. And now you're in Nashville and not Montana. So probably taking a little bit of a break from that type of activity.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, I've got plenty of fish over the summer and the fall. And yeah, here enjoying the family and just goofing around, you know, having fun, watching everything going on. Kind of, you know, you get college national championship games and super wild card weekend and coaching changes and all that stuff. So just kind of, you know, staying in touch with everything.
So, but you watched all of the games like us, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. I actually was 5 of 6 this weekend.
Ooh, which one did you get wrong?
I actually got the Rams at Seattle wrong.
What?
And it wasn't hard feelings. It wasn't sour grapes. It wasn't either. Because I'm a Sean McVay fan, and you know there's still some players there that you know that we brought on board. So, and I was pulling for him. And again, I'm a Pete Carroll fan. I'm just trying to be objective in that. Okay, there's no home field advantage. Jared's had a whirlwind week with his thumb. Wolford did pretty well the week before, but that Seattle defense. And then I just thought Russell, you know, I'm close with Shoddy and everything. And I just thought Russell would just pull it off somehow. And it didn't happen. But the other ones, I think.
So you called the Browns?
I called the Browns, yes. Called the Browns.
I called the Browns, but I don't know if I get to a credit for that because we were having a spread conversation, like, oh, they're favored by blah, and then, oh, I'll take the Browns. So I need to, what I learned from this weekend, because I felt very good about my picks. The one that I got wrong was I took Washington against the spread. Anyway.
Okay, let me clarify things. I was not spreads or anything.
No,
like
you're taking them straight up.
Who's going to win?
Sure. That's the way to do it. That's the baller way to go, coach. You're just like calling.
Did you think they were going to play Heineke? Or did you think they were going to go with Alex?
Well, I think at that point, we kind of knew that it was going to be a long shot for Alex. Yeah. And I didn't think that they would. They actually put up more points on offense than I thought that they were going to. The problem was that they actually gave up more points on defense than I expected. I thought that they might hold the Bucs to about 20 points or so. And then I thought it's going to be a push for the Washington defense to put up more than that. But I thought maybe if you get a defensive touchdown or a couple of turnovers, it didn't go in that. The whole game didn't go the way that I thought it was going to go. But
got hard on the defenses, man, because they're out there for so long. You can see it kind of trending there. You know, it's a three and out. Oh, it's a draw. And then it's, and all of a sudden your defense is getting tired. And let's go back to Cleveland. There were some faraway looks in those Cleveland Browns eyes last night, you know, as the points started coming back. And then, you know, Chris and Al were like, okay, this thing's not over yet. They need a score here, then a score there. And I kind of felt like they'd have it under control because I've really started to like Baker, you know, and what he's done and watched him close and just thought he'd have the poise. You know, it's that first playoff game thing that kind of wigs people out sometimes, and you have to get through the first one to do something in the playoffs. I think that stuff was behind him. So it was, you know, it was comforting to see them play and make the plays. And I mean, how's it like to be Pittsburgh and start the game off the way they did? But anyway.
Well, and that's, I guess that's a good question for you. How much do you think that the way that the game started impacted the way that the game went? Because, I mean, come out, you've got a plan, and all of a sudden it's completely out the window before you can even do anything.
I don't think that they deterred from their plan. This is Pittsburgh. because this is a different Pittsburgh Steelers team. You know, it's a Pittsburgh Steelers team where you don't see any play action pass at all. It's all drop back, and the run game's just not there.
And yet they were running. They were down 28-0, and it was like, oh, let's give it to Connor. Anyway, I digress. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, they had to do it every once in a while, but I mean, I don't know how many pass attempts he had, probably close to 70 or something like that. But he can't. He made the comeback 2 weeks ago doing the same thing. So, you know, to me, had they just stayed in the game, I think you'd have seen a little bit more run efforts, and you probably wouldn't have seen the scoring out of Pittsburgh. But it was catch up or die, and you know, I thought they did a good job trying to close the gap there. But yeah, it's just hard. Teams change, and we can put an asterisk on everything as far as COVID's concerned. It's just so hard. For me personally, again, I want to take a moment just to compliment the NFL and the Players Association and everything for being able to pull it off, because they did, especially, you know, they got the draft and people goes, oh man, they did the draft. Now, are they getting a little more too confident they'll pull this thing off? But they pulled it off, and it's not an easy thing, but it's just different. There's no home field advantage. There's, you know, there's no crowd. There's so much talking going back and forth. And it's like having a 7-on-7 with 11 guys and every once in a while running it. And then when you run it, oh man, we got to go get that guy in the ground. Well, he's big, you know. It was just a different season. But nonetheless, I think it's represented well going to the divisional weekend.
You mentioned Baker playing well. He is the oldest quarterback left on the AFC side. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Just these young guns out there.
It turns. And what's happening is you're seeing these guys, they're stepping in and they're playing sooner than you thought. Now, again, it takes a couple of years to get there. They all need that experience and things like that. It's like Jared, you know, when we brought Jared on board my last year there, Jared at Cal hadn't called a play in the huddle before. He just, a call came in from the sideline and, you know, he goes, on your mark, get set, go. Here comes the ball. And they, so it takes time, but you know, the young coach is doing a great job getting these guys ready to play. I mean, a non-playoff team, for example, what they did in the Charger organization this year was really, really off the charts. You know, it's unfortunate to see Anthony go, but what Herbert did down there is really off the charts. And so, you know, that gives everybody hope. Hey, maybe we'll go out and get a guy and maybe we'll be in the playoffs or close to the playoffs in a couple of years. But yeah, it was a cool weekend. And to your point, these young guys are going to be household names for a long time ahead.
Speaking of young guys, did you watch the Nickelodeon broadcast at all?
No. No. Is that what you had while you were feeding the kids breakfast this morning or what?
Well, that was in the middle of the day here, Jeff. So we don't eat breakfast at one. But but yeah, the Nickelodeon broadcast, I did actually watch that one because I thought that maybe that was – well, first of all, just out of curiosity, I wanted to see what a Nickelodeon broadcast looked like. And then I thought, okay, I'll stick with this because maybe my kids will see something that will keep them more invested and that'll allow mom to sit on the couch for a little bit longer and fully focus on this football. It was a very interesting broadcast, though. People who watched it, I'm sure, will agree that there was a lot of breaking it down so that if you are trying to teach your kids about football, it can be a complicated game to teach. And so it was interesting in that regard. It's a bummer that the Bears didn't really provide much interesting content for the kids to take in.
So are they going to do it again this weekend?
They're not going to do it again this weekend, but my guess is, well, and there's already been discussion about them doing it again in the future.
Pro Bowl would be a good place to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
My son had a Saints stack in that game in his DFS roster. That's the gambling degenerate future that I alluded to, because I set him up with a DFS roster just for yesterday so that he could be invested again. There's a lot of recruitment that's taking place in my house right now, Jeff.
So what you're saying, you blocked the FanDuel app on his own phone right now, right?
he will be going back to it next week too. Don't worry. I'm willing to contribute $5 to get him invested in the games. Not that there were tears after the Colts lost because he randomly picked them before the first game. So that's something that I'm going to have to battle, is the competitive nature while I try and rope him in.
So Lindsay, how did you put your kid through school? Well, I started back in 2000,
exactly.
Middle of the season with FanDuel, and started with $5, and I got all their education covered, right?
That'd be so much winning, if only. Yeah. All right, so I know you were watching the games, not just as a fan, but as somebody interested in getting back into the game from a coaching standpoint. I've got lots of questions for you about that. First, though, I do want to talk about these games and the news that came out of them a little bit further. And so let's go ahead and break the huddle. All right, first up, schedule is set for next week. We've got the Rams and the Packers and the Ravens and Bills on Saturday. Then it is the Browns and Chiefs and the Bucks versus the Saints on Sunday. The Bucks getting a boost in that game on defense. Linebacker Devin White has been cleared to return from the COVID list. That's big for them. Browns also getting right in that department. It sounds like they'll have everybody back from COVID, including Kevin Stefanski. Bills will not have Zach Moss. He's out for the rest of the playoff run with an ankle injury. The Rams say that they are expecting Aaron Donald to play on Saturday. He has rib cartilage damage. What they're not saying is who will start at quarterback, Goff or Wolford. So that will be a big one to track this week. And obviously, I'd love to get your take on that, Jeff. First, though, the big coaching news. Doug Peterson out in Philadelphia, fired Monday after 5 years and a Super Bowl win. I felt like this was kind of inevitable after his team reacted the way that they did to his moves in week 17 to put Sudfeld in a close game. Felt like it would be hard for him to get the locker room back. But the reports about his firing aren't talking about that much at all. They mostly point to conflicting vision for the future, staff-related issues, maybe quarterback-related issues. Do you think that he could have fixed whatever culture problems were created in that last regular season game if he were to remain?
I think it would have been difficult, especially, you know, with respect to this season. When you're – first off, Lindsay, I mean, guys are going to win whatever it takes. They're not going to settle for anything less than a 100% effort to win the game. It doesn't matter when you're playing, where you're playing, what have you. Now you add COVID on top of that, and you take players away from their family for the holidays. You take them away from funerals. You take them away from weddings or marriages and this and that, and you lock them down and you quarantine them. And then, and to do everything to win games and just basically rip out their any kind of life outside of football. And then all of a sudden they're looking on the field going, what's going on here? And so I think it would have been difficult. I'm not there. We probably will really never know why the decision was made, but I think in retrospect, that thing should have been given a little bit more thought. Now, you know, you didn't have a preseason, so Studfield couldn't play in the preseason games and so on and so forth. It just, when I saw it happen, you know, as you did, first off, the fourth and goal from the five, and I look at it from a football standpoint, I mean, you know, there's a chance to complete the pass. There's only three guys out in the route. So it's not like you're trying to beat the defense here or out-scheme the defense. I mean, there are three guys out. Granted, that, I mean, guys might have stayed in because of pressure, but that wasn't a goal to go attempt from a play calling standpoint, in my opinion. And then to see the looks on Hurst's face when what's going on here? It didn't look like he knew anything about it. And the bottom line is that I think it's going to be hard. Unfortunately, there's going to be players that will not play in another NFL game ever. And I don't know who they are. I don't know their roster, but this was the last game that these kids played in. And they didn't get a chance to win it because of that. And, you know, again, I think Joe Judge put it as well as he could possibly put it. The league kind of looked at it and everything, but it doesn't surprise me that this happened. And I feel bad. Nobody wants to see anybody, you know, be dismissed. I mean, you're not just talking about Doug. You're talking about 16 to 18, 22 other families that are now out looking for work. And now Jeffrey Lurie and Howie have to get back in, and they got to figure out which direction they're going and sort the quarterback situation out. So it's not easy. And I think if, you know, in retrospect, you know, you had to do it all over again, that probably would have done something different.
There has been the suggestion made that this makes it easier to retain Carson Wentz. Is that something that you think the Eagles should prioritize after what you've seen this year?
Well, I think based on the fact that, you know, he's been recently compensated and, you know, he's won a lot of games. I think you want to do everything you possibly can to keep him, knowing that there's nothing wrong with competition. And obviously you've got two guys that can compete and they're different, but you've got two guys that competition is going to create a much more production out of the position. Now, what they have to decide for themselves is, okay, where do we go? Is it a Hurst? Is Jalen's team now? And we're going to move on from Carson. Well, if that's the case, then you got to maximize whatever you can get from him. But these are the decisions that are going to be made as they go into the, you know, to replacing Doug process. And they're not easy, but Carson, it was hard this year, but, you know, I have my own theories. Once you get into year 4 and 5, Lindsay, you know, I go back and cite a lot of different examples based on my own personal experience and other experience out there. That's kind of a funky moment in a quarterback's career, year 4, year 5.
Why is that?
They lose. Well, this is my take. Okay. There's so much pressure on the quarterback over those first 4 or 5 years. And doesn't have anything to do with Sundays. It's the pressure during the week. It's the pressure to be perfect every single day, every single practice. And unless you create an environment where it's fun, where they're enjoying themselves. And I learned that the hard way with Steve, because in year 6 with Steve, after the Super Bowl year, when we came back the year after, Steve was done. I mean, I dealt with him for 3 weeks where he was done retiring, lost a passion, couldn't find a fun. And then, you know, once we got to the heart of the matter and we got to the root of it, we were able to pull our way through it. But you look around the league over time, I would submit to you a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of names popular names, Hall of Famers would agree with that assessment, is that year 3, year 4, 5, 6 is really hard. It's got to be fun. And this is that year 4 or that year 5 for Carson. And it's just the pressure's overwhelming. And you can put on a happy face and do all you want and act like everything's good and take responsibility for it. But it's a game, man. And you got to have fun doing it. And the people around you got to create that environment. So, you know, that's an issue that Carson has to come to terms with. There's, you know, he's got health issues. He's got to get healthy and get going. And, you know, maybe it was an offensive thing. I don't know. COVID, whatever it is, but he needs a fresh start. But he has shown that he can take you to where you want a quarterback like that to take you to. So they ask him to just definitely have some decisions to make. And it's not something that they're going to sort out over a week's time, nor are they going to sort it out through interviewing candidates. You know, everybody's going to come in and tell them what they want to hear. You know, someone's going to go, oh, did you see Fields? Fields played at Ohio State, and he had this great game against Clemson, and shoot, he's way up there, so he'd be worthy of the number 2 pick. Oh, really? Well, yeah, okay, we'll get out of that pick, and we'll see, you know, whatever. You know, you just trade picks away, you do those things. And so I think there's issues there, and, you know, they need some people with experience to get through them, get to the bottom of it, and then go from there.
That's an interesting point. There's another coach situation that I think we're all keeping our eye on. It's Monday afternoon right now as we sit here and tape this, and I've been refreshing Twitter all morning, just waiting for something to come down about Matt Nagy, about him either being retained or not retained. I feel like that's a weird situation for the Bears because you just took a team to the postseason. And same with Mitch, right, at quarterback. They both did so much better. The team as a whole did so much better down the stretch, but they did better against lesser competition. And then when they played those good teams at the very end, the Packers and then the Saints yesterday, it was right back to the same problems that they had earlier in the year. Couldn't get anything going on offense, just 9 points in their playoff game. Only touchdown was a garbage time touchdown in the final seconds. They went 1 for 10 on third down. And that one that they converted was at the end of the game, another garbage time situation, just 11 first downs in the whole game. How should we judge a coach's performance after a season like that?
Well, I think, you know, I hate to say this, but I think everybody needs to take a deep breath because this particular season is being compared to seasons of past. And this season has an asterisk on it because of the pandemic. We have no idea what these guys, what these clubs went through from a preparation standpoint, from a practice standpoint, from a meeting standpoint, from, you know, it's like these, some of these games at the end, you go, why are they in that coverage? And how do you complete a pass with 15 seconds left to go in the game and pick up 40 yards and kick a field goal and lose or win the game? Why are these things happening? Well, I'll tell you why they're happening. It's because you don't have the same guys in the meeting rooms, and you don't have the practice time to go through the switch situational stuff. You don't have the ability as a play caller to call the things that put them in position, okay, to prevent those types of big plays situationally. So it's all different. So I wish that they would just give people a break, you know. I mean, in Matt's case, I mean, Matt came in and, yeah, they went to the playoffs his first year, right, and they lost on the field goal, you know, or missed field goal. And I still think it was blocked. I don't think it was missed. But, you know, that's Cody Parkey field goal. And so you come back and, you know, you're battling around. You lose some players and you do this. You give Nick Foles an opportunity and it doesn't work. So you go back to Matt, who you didn't draft. And so, you know, I think he deserves a break here. And, you know, he's got a defense. His defense played hard. So I just wish people would take a deep breath and go, okay, hey, look, we put a great product out there. We got the fan base behind us and the people got to see games. But let's not make the normal decisions. I mean, let's go back to, 3 weeks ago, you had four GMs that were fired. Mm-hmm. GMs never get fired during the year. I mean, they'll make changes at the end of the year, or the head coach goes and then the GM, whatever. But GMs got fired. Why? Because they couldn't do Zoom interviews or they couldn't process the COVID protocol. So I just think it's an odd year. Now, if you're somebody that wants to get in and has an opportunity to head coach a job, hey, this is a great year for you. Well, there's seven spots now and there may potentially maybe eight if it's Matt. So I think it's unfair. It's setting the NFL back, just because of what they did such a great job in spite of the pandemic, getting the product on the field. And now you're just using the same basis, for decision-making that you used in years past or when the pandemic's over to make these decisions.
Well, it sounds like Deshaun Watson is very frustrated with the way that they're making decisions down there in Houston. There are reports that he wants to force his way out of town, frustrated with the moves that they've made there from a leadership standpoint, the lack of consultation. Can you see him playing somewhere else next season, or do you think there's no chance that the Texans let this go there?
If they make the right decision, then the first person that the new head coach is going to talk to is Deshaun. And if they made the right decision, they'll walk out of that, out of his office, smiling and laughing, arm around each other, and go win games. Now, if they don't, then he's going to, you know, he potentially, you know, could ask for some, you know, for a change or demand a change.
Should they check with him before they hire a new head coach? Should he be involved in that decision-making process, or is that a little bit too far?
You're asking a former head coach if I think ownership and the general manager, who was just recently hired, should consult with the quarterback to see who the head coach is going to be? I would say no.
Okay.
I would say if it were me, that's my responsibility. I'll go back. I mean, I was really fortunate after taking 2011 off, and I had an opportunity to choose. And so I wanted two things. I wanted an owner, mm-hmm. and I wanted a quarterback. A good owner and a good quarterback. And I don't need to define them, but I will tell you that at the time I went to St. Louis, Sam Bradford was a franchise quarterback and they didn't consult with Sam. Sam was there when I got there and we were really excited, you know, to move forward. And, you know, we made progress the first year and then he tore his ACL in year two and year three, you know? So, I think the players need to trust ownership. They need to trust the front office and they voice their opinion. I mean, No, Lindsay, is my answer. Yeah.
So maybe consulting is too strong a word, because I don't know that I'm suggesting he should sit in on the interviews or anything like that, because that obviously creates a weird dynamic even moving forward. When you hire the head coach, it's like, who's actually in charge here? And I understand how that creates problems, but maybe should they go to him and just pick his brain? And say, like, here's what I think works. What do you think we need? What do you think would fill some gaps? What didn't work? That kind of stuff. Like, at the very least, to make him feel empowered, and then take his suggestions as somebody who knows the offense maybe better than anybody, and what is working and isn't working, and then implement that in your search.
I think you have a conversation with them, and the conversation will go like this: hey, look across the NFL. Okay, here's your defensive minded head coaches in the league right now. Okay, how are they doing? How's Coach Belichick doing? Okay, how's Coach Carroll doing? How's Coach Rivera doing? And the list goes on. Okay, so here's a defensive minded head coach that has surrounded himself obviously with good play callers. Okay, so you know that's one option. The other option is to go after a young coordinator, okay, that a quarterback may be interested and intrigued by, a guy that's never been a head coach before, that will soon understand how difficult it is to, one, be the head coach, and two, be the play caller. There's only one guy that's really kicking ass, excuse my language, right now, and he's coaching Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Okay. He's really, really good at it. You don't find Sean's around like that. So you're going to go, they have options. They got different directions. They can go with a defensive minded head coach. I wouldn't suggest they go with a defensive coordinator that's being promoted to head coach. Cause if you look back over the last 5 or 6 years, that didn't work. It did not work in the National Football League. And for whatever reason, but it didn't work. And, you know, I'm not there, but Steve Wilks and Matt Patricia and these things, they're just not panning out. There's too much to do. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to go about putting the right head coach in place. So it's complicated. So do you want to bring your quarterback into a complicated process, or you just want to keep him informed? I say yes to keep him informed, but no to the complicated process because it's too complicated.
One of the landing spots, right, if this goes that far, and I realize that you think that they should just figure it out there in Houston and that we shouldn't get to that point, but we're hearing San Francisco, obviously. We're hearing New England as a team that maybe might be in that mix or should be. And then we're hearing Miami too. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on that. Is it too soon to know what you have in Tua?
I don't think so. I think he got plenty of opportunity to play, and fortunately for him, he had somebody to learn from. There's no better guy in the building than Fitz. And so, that experience alone, it was one season, but you could actually make a case that it was two or three seasons if you got to sit behind and learn from Fitz. So I don't think it's too soon to make that decision. I think he's a really good player.
So based on what you've seen, your decision would be this is the guy that you build around?
He was he's so accurate, and he's mobile, and, you know, and even if he throws with the other hand, I mean, he's a good player. So I wouldn't jump to it's just hard. You get so many opinions, and, you know, what happens now, and I've seen it over the last few years, is, you got all these experts out there, and then they say something and someone else says something. All of a sudden it's the truth, and it's so far from the truth. But, you know, people need to take a deep breath and relax and appreciate, their opportunities and where they are and what they're doing. And decision makers obviously need to look at the big picture and not just trust. And I don't mean to put down search firms or those kind of things, but they've never been in locker rooms. I mean, they've never called plays or scheduled training camp or had to discipline players or anything like that. So, you know, it's just you got to get the right people making the right hires, and then you deal with the personnel issues after that.
Did you think that it was the right call from a coaching standpoint when Brian Flores went away from Fitz when he did to get Tua in? that was kind of a curious move just because they were still in the hunt and in a position to potentially win the division. And then they move away from Fitzpatrick, who is admittedly a roller coaster, but gives you an opportunity to win every game. And then they go to this guy who's a very different type of quarterback and changes things dramatically in terms of what your offensive output
is. Yeah, it's a great point. I think we don't know what went on in the building. Only Coach Flores does. And so, you know, and I would submit this, what he's doing is he's making decisions where in the best interest of the future of the franchise, if that's to get the young guys some playing time and so being, have a chance to win some games, that's a good decision. So I'd never second guess. Well, I said never second guess a coach's decision to play a quarterback, but we just did previously with respect to Philadelphia. But the situations are completely different. So I would say no. I think right now that they're glad that he got the playing time and the opportunity that he did, because they know what they have. And if he's maxed out, then they got a problem. But I don't see him as being maxed out. I see him as having a tremendous future.
Let's try and first guess a quarterback situation, because we don't know what's happening this weekend in terms of the Rams quarterback. McVay is keeping his starter a secret again, did a very good job keeping that close to his vest last week. We heard comments made after Heinicke's performance on Saturday about how his skill set is one of the hardest things for a defender to go up against, particularly when there's not that much tape on a guy, I suppose, the unpredictability. Is that element of Wolford's game something that the Rams maybe need, considering the way their offense has failed to get going lately?
Well, it came as a surprise, because they went back to the Alliance and they watched him run around. He didn't have to run around much. He just completed balls there and did stuff. So, you know, I think it came as a surprise because they were surprised that, oh, this guy can run. I mean, they got to run around and throw accurately on the run, on the move. And so I think it came as a surprise. But, you know, I mean, as far as what they're going to do and how things are going to unfold up in Green Bay, it's going to be cold up there. That thumb's going to hurt a little bit, and not that he'll feel it, but he needs to still feel the football. So I don't know. You got to trust Sean. I mean, Sean's, you know, every step along the way, he's made good decisions. And so you just have to trust him. That would be the last place I'd want to take a football team the way Aaron's playing right now. So, but I mean, hey, that's going to be a good one. I mean, that their defense, you know, that guy up in the middle there is a pretty good player. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. And, you know, I don't even know what's the medical condition or what's, you know, what's Wolford's diagnosis.
They're calling
right
it a
now.
Stinger.
Okay. Well, yeah, it looked like it stung.
It looked so, like a lot of things.
Hurt. Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. Aaron Donald too.
Pull the ball down and not get out of bounds. Yeah.
What's a rib cartilage a rib cartilage situation? How
more
does that
painful
impact him?
Lindsay, more painful than actually cracked ribs.
Really?
So yeah, he'll have to have a handful of Advil before he plays, but he'll be fine.
Yeah. And so. Advil in the form of a shot.
Maybe. You Maybe. Said that I didn't.
Yeah, no, they don't do that. I know.
No. No. I think Aaron will be okay.
Did you see a team, or have you seen a team that you think can knock off the Chiefs or the Packers? Or do you think that those are the two teams that ultimately get out of the different conferences?
I really like what Buffalo has going right now. You know, I think that's probably the best chance would be Buffalo. Now, granted, I was sitting here in Nashville, you know, noon kickoff yesterday and watched that and thought, oh my gosh, Lamar's back.
Yeah.
And third and one or third and two, and all of a sudden he, you know, the play's over and his head coach said it's the best run by a quarterback I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, I don't want to bait that, but it's pretty dang good play. So I think if they can get going, you know, I think both those teams would have a chance to do so. It's interesting. That I don't know. I mean, Cleveland, you know, I'm a Browns fan, man, like everybody else is. I've coached against them and watched them you be reminded they went 0-16?
I know.
0-16. and didn't make a change. You know, it's like, so anyway, they're a good football team. They're going to be good for a while. And so they just need to go out and do the best they can. But I to answer your question, Buffalo one has the best chance, I think, then Baltimore two, and then, you know, we'll see. I wouldn't count Cleveland out right now, but they're just, they got to get healthy and, you know, get rid of the COVID stuff and you get healthy up front.
What the Browns did, just insane. No practice all week, no head coach, several other coaches missing. They don't have their three-time Pro Bowl left guard, Joel Bitonio. They don't have Denzel Ward. They don't have Olivier Vernon. They end up with a 5-0 turnover differential and their first playoff win since the 1994 season. Just a super fun team to root for, of course. I say that. Sorry, Steelers fans.
That's a long
time. That
was a long time ago. I was an interim head coach in 1994. That's a long time ago.
I was a senior in high school.
Or you're getting ready to go to USC.
Fight on.
Yeah, baby.
Okay, I'm interested to hear your individual performances that stood out to you, that the people that jumped off the page to you. We're going to talk a little MVPs after this.
Hey everyone, I'm Abner Matis, and I want to invite you to listen to my new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Matis. I am an ex-4-time world champion boxer, commentator, but most importantly, I am a husband and a dad. I will be talking about boxing, will be joined by many of my friends and colleagues, but I will also be talking about family, culture, community, and life with the people that have made me the person that I am today. So join me on my podcast, On the Hook with Abner Matis, a new podcast from Blue Wire. Subscribe wherever you are listening to the podcast.
Super wild card MVPs. Let's talk about our favorite performances from the weekend. Okay, who?
Oh boy, well,
who jumps out at you?
I'll let you go. You want to go by position, or you just want to go?
Ooh, by position. Look at
position.
You. My favorite long snapper.
You got quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, gosh, I'm kind of all over the place. So Lamar Jackson, obviously, I think you have to give him a nod with 136 yards on the ground, the third best rushing performance in a playoff game ever. And by the way, he has the second best rushing performance ever too, which was last year. I love the fact that he was able to dispel the whole can't win in the playoffs narrative, and that he wasn't along for the ride, right? Like, they are where they are. Their defense did a great job, clearly, shutting down Derrick Henry. But the fact that he did what he did offensively is at least part of the reason that he is there.
I would agree with that. I also would say that the old man down in New Orleans had a pretty good game.
Yeah. What'd you like about him?
Everything he did. The way he spread the ball around, even the last play towards the end when he was under siege and he got the ball out to Kamara, and you know, there was a touchdown run after that. I mean, he just sees everything. Is in complete control. I mean, he's at his age, and you know, I know that both of them this weekend, the one thing they do have in common is their coaches are still calling quarterback sneaks with both of these old dudes. So they're pretty good at it. But I would say, you know, I say that was pretty impressive what Drew did. That's a good defense. That's a good Bear defense. And you could sense their frustration.
Do you have any arm strength concerns with him at this point?
No.
He can still make all the throws?
He can make all the throws, yeah. Yeah.
Brady.
He can do it all.
Brady played well. He's another quarterback that you could give a nod to. We're just going to go through all the quarterbacks that did not.
Well, we're going to wait a week to decide between the two of them. If you want to go on now, we'll crown Lamar, and then we'll go on. No disrespect to those two.
So another one, though, that I want to mention, who didn't win, so you can't win an MVP award when you don't win, but just blew my mind in terms of what I was expecting to see from him and then what I actually did see from him, was Taylor Heinicke. In his second NFL start ever, just baller. That one drive when they were down 12 and they went on a touchdown drive to pull them to within 5. It was an 11-play drive. They threw the ball 10 times. He completed 9 of those throws. He was just money in the bank. And I was just so impressed with his poise, with all of it. He gave them a chance to win that I didn't expect the offense to do.
On top of that, you know, Todd Bowles' stuff is a little unconventional. It's good, it's sound, but it looks different. And he was able to do that against a different appearance, some things he'd not seen before. He was able to do that. So I tip a hat to him as well.
You've been around the league for a very long time. What do you think that does for his future prospects? Just that one game on that stage.
He's got a job forever as a backup.
Forever as a backup. Know?
Yeah.
It's like the best job ever to be a backup quarterback in the NFL. I want that job.
Well, come in and play. You're going to play. You know, you need to lean on your backup and, you know, come on and play. So, I think they've done a good job. They kept it quiet. These offensive coordinators and stuff, they keep things quiet, especially when you got a guy that's familiar with the system, you know, calling plays and things like that. It's easy when you got a guy that's just kind of been in your system for years.
Cam Akers, another guy who had a great weekend, 176 scrimmage yards, nothing working for the Rams in the passing game, really needed him to pick up yards on the ground, and he did that. Their defense, obviously, you have to mention them in any conversation about an MVP, though I'm not totally sure who to isolate, considering that Aaron Donald was on the sideline, and they kept it going. 5 sacks, 2 takeaways, 1 defensive touchdown. Russell Wilson was completely out of sorts, 11 for 27. That's a 41% completion percentage. Seattle just could not do anything offensively. Who stood out to you in that game?
Seattle's offensive line. It's been hard. It's been hard on them all year. It's just been hard, and that's just kind of what happens. I mean, D-linemen, that Ram defensive line, they watch tape, and all they did was just kind of take turns, you know, and they're rooting for each other, and so it's hard. I mean, it's hard. You got injuries and COVID and this and that, and people playing different positions, especially against that defense and that front where, you know, there's no telling where Aaron's going to line up, and, you know, if you're going to try to turn protection to him or turn the center this way and that, and it gets confusing. They create one-on-ones and they win. So, you know, I would say that, you know, Seattle's going to bounce back. Russell's going to bounce back. Russell, you know, he just didn't look the same to me. Looked like there was something bothering him. Been a step here or a step there. Normally he'll get out of there. You know, he gets out of there and accelerates and you just didn't see it out of him. Now, you got to credit the Rams secondary as well for matching up and taking things away. But to your point, the Rams running back is a difference maker. Seattle's pretty good at run defense now. You know where they're going to be, and you got to get hats on them. They still get off blocks and make tackles. And, the difference, again, is I'd say COVID. I mean, what's Seattle's record at home over the last 10 years, 100 people, or however long. So when
that
you can
game's
hear,
totally different if the 12s are in the stands, right?
It's a different game up there. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
One thing Pete Carroll said, putting a bow on his season in one of his exit interviews with the press, he said that they have to run the ball more next year, which is not going to make the Let Russ Cook crowd happy. As you know, there are many people that are in that particular fan club. I tend to agree, though, that they needed to find more balance and that what they did early in the season wasn't necessarily sustainable for the way that they're built. And I think historically what they've done there in terms of emphasizing the run game to set up the pass, it does open things up for Russell to have some of that success every once in a while downfield. I know a lot of analytics people will curse this take. What is your take?
I Pete said that 2 years ago and Shoddy said, yes, sir, coach. And he did it.
Yeah.
This year it's hard when you don't have the guys up front. The guys have worked together. It's not an easy thing to do. And,
kind of like with the Steelers, right?
Yeah. They weren't there, but, they weren't far behind. It's trust me, Shoddy wants to run the football. That's where that's where the big plays come from. He loves running the football.
Explain that. Because there are going to be analytics people who listen to that who say that is not where the big plays come from and then they'll break down all the math and say, you know, you're going to average like 3 yards a carry or whatever. Whereas if you're throwing, you average like, you know, you're going to pick up 10, 15, whatever. And so the math tells you that throwing far more frequently is going to be more successful for your offense. Break down from a coaching standpoint why that is not the case.
It's not the case. Let me say this. It may be the case if you have a really good quarterback. Okay. But people just don't have Hall of Fame type quarterbacks. Okay. Like Ben. okay, like Russ, okay? So, you know, they can overcome the lack of the running game and stuff like that. But, you know, you look at Pittsburgh, there's no play action pass at all, okay? Big plays come off a play action pass. Where do the Rams plays, pass plays come from? They come from play action pass. Can the Rams run it? We just talked about Cam. So you need to be able to run it to set up big plays. You need to be able to run it so you can play action pass, so you can also protect. Play action pass, a big part of play action pass is for protection. It's different. It eliminates that you got to block him, you got to block him. You can turn protect, you can slide, you can bootleg protect, and you wash everybody down. You slow the rush down. Okay, so the analytics people, they need to look at the whole picture, you know, and I get it. I mean, I understand there's a lot of numbers and things like that, but there's a lot of factors that go into this. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you lose a left tackle, for example, and you're going to have to turn your protection to get the left tackle inside help. And when you do that, you're exposing the guys on the right side in a normal drop back protection. Play action protection allows you to do both. It allows you to distribute and to stymie or at least slow down pass rush. So
talking about analytics here. How open are you to that information? Talking about you getting back into coaching, is that something, because that feels like it's a big part of the game now. A lot of clubs have an analytics department and there's all this talk about, you know, going for two or going for it on fourth down in certain situations. I feel like that part of the game has changed a lot, right? Over the time when you have been coaching and around the game. How open are you to taking in that information? How do you find the right balance between that and just what you know to be true based on what your strengths are and momentum and things like that?
Well, I mean, if you're not open to more information, then you got no chance of being successful. I mean, there's a time and a place for it. I don't want somebody in my ear on the sideline, say on fourth and goal from the five.
Oh, you have a 58% chance of winning if, yeah.
That's not fair to your play caller. So those kind of things have to be discussed during the offseason in time. You may have a 30-minute meeting a week with your analytics department just to talk about things that are going around the league or talk about decisions that were made. That's how you learn. You learn from people's mistakes or people put themselves in a position to get an edge. So I think it's important and I'm not opposed to it. I saw a game, I broadcast a game firsthand a couple of years ago in Jacksonville with the Jets, and you know, Todd Bowles, he didn't go for it on one fourth down opportunity, and then when he did go for it on the next fourth down opportunity, he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
And it was as plain as day, and I was brought to my attention that he had an analytics guy in his ear. Well, how'd that work out for you? So, you know, again, these are studies. These are, you know, just more information, more statistics that you have to help you make the right decision. What's your feeling on the, let's see, it was fourth and goal from the five, Indianapolis, right before half, a minute, 46 seconds left, and Frank decides to go for it from the 4.5 or 5 yard line, doesn't get in, and they lose by 3.
Yeah. There were a lot of decisions in that game, right? He clearly was very aggressive from an analytics standpoint.
Yeah, if that's what the analytics say, and I guess this is my point, is that the analytics, in my view, bring you up to the point to where you make the decision, mm-hmm. okay? And you either do or you don't. And then it's over. Okay. They never follow back and say, when you did make the decision or you didn't. For example, I mean, it's like the day after the draft. You know, organizations are given these grades by all the draft experts the day after the draft. Oh, they got an A, they got a B, they got an F. Okay. Well, why don't you give the grades out 4 years after that draft?
Right.
Okay, so analytics is kind of, it's up to that moment in time, and then it's just left behind.
Yeah.
And so it's and every week there's more and more information. So I mean, what, I you know, I mean,
what there about was the a go play. For two?
There was a play in this town about 20 miles from here called the Music City Miracle. And you're probably familiar with it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you heard of it. Okay. Well, guess what? When it was ruled by replay that the ruling on the field stands, okay, I was up by 5. So what should I have done? No brainer, right? No time left, 6 seconds left. I didn't think my offense could execute a play. A 2-point play. There's no way. Plus, in my mind, I thought, you know what? What are the odds of this happening twice in the same century, let alone in the same game? So I kicked the extra point. You know, my heart was in my throat because on that ensuing kickoff, after everything, the whole world had changed because we had pulled off this play, they ran the ball to midfield. I thought I was going to die. You know, I did. But the point is, there's a time and a place for them. And so to get back to your original question, which this has been fun. Oh, yes. Analytics, information is there. Use it. But don't use it I think if you take it too far to an extreme, then you lose the human element out of this and the subjectivity and all the things that head coaches are getting paid to do and all the information. There's a gut feel, you know, and there's nothing better than when your gut feel comes out right. And if your gut feel comes out right, more and more and more and more, you're a pretty good coach, you know? And
so there's one situation that the analytics says is that the recommendation is not changing, right? Like it's a hard and fast thing that they suggest. And I'm interested to get your take on it because it came up this weekend. When you are down by 2 scores and you pull to within 8, particularly in the fourth quarter, so you're, you know, time is an issue. They say you should
always
go for two.
2 scores or 2 possessions. 2 scores or 2 possessions. 2 scores.
Down by 2 scores.
Okay, so right. So you've now conversion.
You have scored, yeah, and you pull to within 8. They say you always go for two,
right?
Rather than kick.
Okay.
So in the Colts Bills game that came up, and he, there was that conversation about whether or not you kick. You go for two? Because he went for two. He missed the 2-pointer.
Right.
My husband and I are fighting at home because he's saying he should have just kicked. And I'm saying that's not what, you know, I'm not a math person, right? Like, so I can't totally make the argument. But I'm saying all the analytics people say you have to go for two there because if you're trying to win within regulation, which is the goal, as opposed to playing for overtime, you're going to have to go for two at some point anyway. And so What is your thought there?
Well, the key is what you just said. If you're trying to win in regulation, that's the key. You know, if you're trying to win the game, period, then I think, you know, the extra point, you're down by 7. Okay. You still have a chance to go for 2 after that. And people do that to win in regulation. So to win in regulation, you're going to have to.
If you kick. Well, yes, but then you would have to go for 2 to win in regulation on the second touchdown,
right? That's what I'm saying. It's going to come up now or later to win in regulation. Okay. So if you kick the extra point and you're down by 7, then you got, you know, hey, now at least you score. You got extra point to tie or you got 2-point conversion to win. To me, I think players, again, this is a subjective part of it. I think players like being down by 7. I think down by 8 is 2 scores. Down by 7 is...
Because that 2-point conversion feels really scary at the last second, whereas the kick is a given.
Or at the moment, because if you don't get your... If you go for the 2-point conversion in the moment you're talking about, you don't get it, then what do you have to do? You got to go for the 2-point conversion again.
Well, that's the analytics, though, is that they say you have a better chance of making one if you go for it 2 times than you have of missing both of them.
Yeah.
And that is actually what happened with the Colts. They went for it twice. They missed. Then they had to go for 2 the second time. And then they made it. So they're right back where they started.
And that's where I think the subjectivity comes into play. because you see an offensive play caller sheet. He's got a little thing, a little column over here that says 2-point plays. Okay. Most of them only have a couple in there.
Yeah.
And so defensively, if you can ice them, you got timeouts to spare and call timeout just before the 2-point play attempt. Now he's down to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a lot that goes on. And so,
engaging whether or not you think that 2-point play on the sheet is actually going to work based on what's happened in the game so far, right?
Well, it's the first one. It's the one they practiced all week, or the one that they, you prioritize them. This is our best 2-point play. This is our next best one. This is our third. If they have that many, you can do a poll and find out how many they have. But I know that the 2-point plays, especially during COVID, they're not practiced a lot.
If you miss coaching?
Yes, I miss coaching. Can you tell? Yeah,
right.
I love my life. I'm really lucky. I mean, I'm so blessed to be doing what I'm doing and enjoying it. But what I miss is looking the players in the eye, seeing the players and the joy and improvement and the day-to-day experiences with the players. And fortunately for me, I've had great relationships with the players over time. And I hear from them all the time. You know, we're checking on each other. And I got an interesting text just night before last, and it was, hey man, this is your favorite punt returner of all time, just checking in on you. And I went, okay. So I knew exactly who that was, you know, and it's the kind of relationships that they have. You can ask me who it was.
Who was it, Jeff?
Tavon Austin, man. It was Tavon. So, you know, you just have relationships with those guys, and that's
better
what I
have
miss.
A name
miss-
attached to that.
Oh,
text,
it does.
Cause you better not guess wrong if somebody says it's your favorite such and such ever.
Oh, no, no, I recognize the area code. He changes his phone number all the time, but it's still the same area code. So he's a beauty.
I saw that you had said recently that you would be interested in the Tennessee job if it was open, the University of Tennessee job, if it was open. You're cringing. Why is that?
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up. I was
the opposite of I appreciate this?
No, I mean it. I mean it that way. I was caught a little off guard. I was doing a local radio here. We're going to talk about the Titans and the Ravens because we've had some experience over the years. And I came out of left field and I said, look, I said, they have a head coach. And as far as I know, Jeremy Pruitt's our head coach. And, I can't say whether I'd be interested in it or not, but if it came open, yes, I would be interested in it, but I've never been one to come out and say that, you know, express interest in a job that was currently filled. And I would never do that.
That's a tough situation. Because, you want to get back into coaching. So you don't want to say, no, I'm not interested in a job. Yeah. Of course, I'm interested in whatever job. Like, we can talk, you know, but it's currently occupied. And
well, what it is if the job opened, would you be interested? What do you say, yes or no?
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, I just responded that way and it took on a life of its own. But Coach Pruitt's still there and they've not made a change. But I did qualify that by saying, you know, I have spent, the last couple of years kind of with, you know, my ear to the ground and nose to the ground in the college game because, you know, it's football and it's totally different. But and I also said in the same interview that I had been contacted more than twice by my alma mater over the years. And
let's talk about that.
I can't go into detail. I mean, they had a head coach. I mean, I told them thanks and I appreciate the interest, but you have a head coach. So I that was the way it was. So
I'm trying to think of how to phrase the question so that it doesn't come across the exact same way as the Tennessee
radio
one. How
about if I give you an
answer
and just smile? Is that good?
Smile.
Is that a good answer? Yeah.
I'm trying to think of phrasing that doesn't get you in trouble. Would that be something that down the road at some point, the Trojans, is that something that you've thought is something that you would like to do? Having nothing to do with the current situation.
Let me phrase this so I don't get you in trouble.
I know. Okay.
Name somebody that has gone on, left their alma mater and had a career because of what the program enabled them to do, and so on and so forth. Name me somebody who wouldn't have interest in going back to their alma mater.
Yeah.
You know, of course, but come on, Clay's there. I mean, they got a coach, and, you know, it's just, it's different. But I think what we're talking about is, do I want to get back into coaching? Yeah, I want to get back into coaching. Yeah,
are come you here. Thinking hey,
Dirk,
college?
Come here. Dirk, come here. Ask him. Come here. Here, Dirk, here. Hey, come here. Ask him.
I was like, is this a puppy or a grandchild at first? And no, then it took a turn where it better have been a dog.
Yeah.
Hi, puppy.
Boy. All right, get down there, buddy. Go. I'm sorry. You distracted me.
Should he go coach the Trojans, puppy?
Oh, Dirk?
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm asking him to. Okay. Are you thinking college is the next move?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. And again, you know, if the right opportunity doesn't come up, I'm okay with that. The memories and the stories and the blessings and the experience and the friendships and relationships that I've had have been off the charts, but I still feel like I have a lot to offer and a lot to give. Not, you know, from my career was a little different in that, you know, I worked for two franchises in the NFL, and I took over 2-2-14 teams, coincidentally. I moved them both. I coached two teams in five different cities and six different stadiums. You know, I took the first one in 5 years. We took the first one in 5 years to the Super Bowl. The next opportunity that I had was also 2-14, and they went to the Super Bowl in 7 years. They just didn't take me with them. So, you know, I can build a program, and so, you know, I have that experience. And so I think the thing, it has to be the right fit, the right place at the right time. But, you know, there's really nothing that will come up on a daily basis that I haven't seen or experienced or been through. And whether that's social injustice or diversity or whatever, I've been through it. And you know, the rewards, which I didn't understand when I got into coaching, because I actually turned down my first coaching opportunity. I didn't realize where the rewards were. Took me, you know, 6 months or so, my first year of coaching. Well, this is really cool. And so it's a reward oriented business, and the rewards come from watching these young men, whatever level they are. But in my case, it was coming from college to the NFL and watching them mature and become, you know, just great people and great players. And then getting the phone calls years after, hey, coach, I just want to call and thank you. And so that's the cool part about it. And
from your favorite,
if that's the way my life goes on, I'm fine with that. But, you know, I do, you know, you miss that sideline, man. Yeah. You just miss it, and you miss everything associated with it.
It feels like, and this has nothing to do with the time that you've been out, but just in general, things change, right? But it feels like in the last few years, things have changed fairly dramatically, and that's just the ebb and flow of it all. But it feels like we had Jordan Palmer on this show a few months back, and he was talking about just how the quarterback position has changed. And he used Jared Goff as an example, nothing against Jared Goff. He was saying, we won't see a guy like Jared Goff, who's like a pure pocket passer where movement is not a primary part of his game. We're not going to see that guy go number mm-hmm. one anymore. It's just gone away from that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that coaching in the league right now would require you to be different as a head coach? Or have you thought about that, ways that you would kind of be malleable?
Well, I think, I mean, I was different every year. You have to change. As a coach, you have to adjust to the players that you have, the players that you want to get, you know, the circumstances, the situations, the game, the staffing, everything. You have to adjust. And, you know, it's not like you cross off 2020 and put 2021 on your installation book and hand it out. You don't do that. You start from scratch every year. So I just think that, you know, I know currently in the NFL, there's some experienced coaches out there. And there's some experienced coaches that are come from special teams backgrounds, one in Baltimore. There's, yeah. You know, that come from defensive backgrounds that come from offensive backgrounds. And, you know, there's guys that are coaching that are older than I am, guys that I went toe to toe with for years and had great rivalries with and things like that. You know, we got, you know, if you're going to be in it long enough, Lindsay, eventually you're going to get escorted out the door. And that happened to me in Los Angeles. And that's good. Where I found solace and peace was that seeing that team go to the Super Bowl 2 years later, the team that we had built. So, you know, I'd like to have an opportunity to build another one. You know, I see things through a different lens. I see through the big picture. From, you know, I don't want to say CEO, but it is. You need to get coordinators. You need to get, you put all the pieces together and the best play callers you possibly can have, and good things happen. You know, I've had MVPs and rookies of the year and leaders in the league and franchise and rushing on single season. And, you know, all, you name it, we've done it over a period of time. And, you know, the challenge for me, and I don't, you know, many people see as excuses, but I, you know, I did take over two teams that were 2-14. I never stepped in to a 7-9 or a 9-7 or a team that was that close to getting over the hump. And so, you know, I've had to start from the bottom and work up, and again, five cities, six different stadiums. It's a challenge, but nonetheless, you know, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And I appreciate you very much. You just give me the opportunity to kind of share my heart on that, because I've been misunderstood a little bit. You know, somebody told me last week, goes, gosh, you're still 11th in all time wins in NFL history. And I go, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, Andy's getting close to having, he may have passed me, but, you know, the glass half empty side is, well, you've got tied for the most losses in NFL history. Well, Bill Belichick and Don Shula are also pretty close to me there. But the reality is, if you're a head coach for 20 years, you go 10-6 every year, you're going to slam dunk the most losses in NFL history. The longer you're in, the more losses you're going to have. So I see life through that glass. It's half full, not half empty. And I still have a lot of time left in my opinion.
20 complete seasons as a head coach. That's crazy. That's a long time. That's a long time.
And I
to
feel cry. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm start over. Yeah. I'm ready. Yeah.
Let's go for 21. I hope you get that chance, Coach. This has been really fun.
One game, I'm guaranteed I'll win it. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like it, Jeff. Thank you so much for doing this. This has been really fun for me.
I appreciate it. And best of luck with your podcast. And you got the number, man. As long as I can handle the Zoom like I did to begin with, I got a chance to come back on.
Of course, especially you put all the Trojan stuff behind you. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah. All day, every day.
I won't change it.
Yeah, all right, that's Coach Jeff Fisher on Twitter, and you're back on Twitter.
I'm back. Yes, been off for a while. Took a break.
Yeah, like we all need to do that every once in a while.
And I took a break, but here we go, baby. Let's go have some fun.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, Coach. Take care.
All right. Bye.